You are listening to KMUZ Turner, Community Radio for the Mid-Willamette Valley, broadcasting to Marion, Polk, and Linn counties at 88.5 FM and serving Salem and Kaiser at 100.7 FM. Also streaming online at kmuz.org and on your smartphone or tablet via the free TuneIn Radio app. You are listening to Down in the Dirt with Diana, and I'm your host, Diana, and this is a show where we talk about all things gardening. So happy spring, everybody. Spring has finally arrived, and thank you all for tuning in today. So our gardening all should be in full force right now. I know that mine is, although as usual, I'm way behind. You know, there's really just always way too much going on, and as we know, life is more than just gardening. Lots of other things distract us from what we really would like to be doing. Anyway, we have gotten what I consider a welcome break from all this sunshine and perfect weather that we've been having with these last few days of this cool, rainy weather. But apparently that's going to change. It's starting to change already. It's kind of nice out today, and we are in for some really beautiful weather by the end of the week with temperatures in the 70s. So that is really going to push things along, and then we are all going to be very busy in our gardens. Now we're going to talk about straw bale gardening. We have John Johnson right here in the chair next to me. And, you know, this straw bale gardening is a technique that I've been reading more and more about. It's gotten lots of press lately in the gardening world. And even among the people that I know, I've been finding a lot of interest, people who've tried it. Some have been successful at it and some not so much. But when I met John at an urban farming class that we're both taking at the Pringle Creek community, he was talking about his method, and he has perfected this straw bale technique that I found really interesting. So I invited him here to share it with our listeners. So hi, John.
Hi, Diane. I'd like to thank you for bringing me on your show.
Oh, no, this is great. I think this is a great topic. And when I told people that I was going to be talking about this, there's lots of people who were really, really interested in it. But before we start talking about that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because I have heard you call yourself the tuxedo gardener. So what does this mean?
This means the system that I've developed, anyone can utilize, put together, even a guy in a tuxedo.
All right. So you mean you don't have to get down and dirty, right?
Never.
No, just getting down in the dirt with Diana, huh?
Whoa. Boy, that's an interesting.
Wait a minute. No, wait. Back up.
This is a public radio station.
That's right. Anyway, you don't need to get your knees dirty then when you're working on your method.
No. Basically, what I do is build a bed about 30 inches high.
Okay.
It's a raised bed. I throw in basically, they're 4 feet by 8 feet, which happens to be standard garden or gate material.
Right, and that's pretty standard for most people build raised beds, certainly no wider than
four feet.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's harder to reach into.
You need
to be able to get all the way around it. This system in a 4x8 bed contains 4 bales of straw, 2 bales of alfalfa, and about 4 to 6 inches of compost.
Okay.
I augment it with a little bone meal and blood meal to start the process.
So wait, let's back up a little. So you have a plot of land, and are you building this directly on top of the soil? You're not putting like a ground cloth or anything underneath?
Basically, what you use is newspaper or cardboard to fill the bottom of the bed. This pretty much kills off all the grass and anything else that's growing underneath it.
Right.
And then you slide the bales in. And you put them intact and remember to put the strings up where the knots are so you can pull them easily out.
Okay, now wait, that's another point, because when you're building a straw bale bed, like not, you're building yours inside of a frame.
Correct.
Correct. But a lot of people haven't done that. And so it does make a difference, the orientation of how you set the bales. Isn't that correct?
Well, yes. You can make sure the stalks are coming straight up so you can allow the moisture and the food sources of a little potting soil to work its way down there. The bacteria will break it down and give you a source of food as well as some root protection.
So that's like the narrow edge is up rather than the flat side.
in my process, I basically use them in a horizontal form. Uh-huh. And the beauty of a 4x8 foot bed is that you can drop four bales right into it and cut the strings, and it expands right to the edge, so you don't have any gaps or anything.
Oh, I see. So how big are these bales? Do you know the dimensions of the bales themselves?
Yeah, roughly 2 feet by 4 feet.
2 by 4. Oh, you said that. Sorry. I should pay attention. Okay, they're 2 by 4 feet. And so you have your straw, you have your bed made, and you have newspaper in the bottom.
Right.
And then where does the alfalfa come in?
The alfalfa is a great source of nitrogen in your plants.
Yeah, I love alfalfa. I use alfalfa meal, but you're talking about...
Flame bales.
Fresh alfalfa?
Yes. Generally, alfalfa is harvested prior to going to seed.
Uh-huh.
And you want to make sure you're using straw and not hay, because hay will grow.
Yeah, hay is full of seeds. I've heard people
You'll really be disappointed.
Made the mistake.
And basically, the bales are composed of flakes. And you just kind of just lay the flakes of alfalfa on top of the bales of straw.
Okay.
And then you cover that up to the top of the bed with compost.
Okay.
So there's no real dirt in this thing.
Uh-huh.
And what I do is brew worm tea.
Uh-huh.
And this creates a huge amount of bacteria as well as some fungi that are good for the plants.
Uh-huh.
The worm tea bacteria basically is utilized by worms to break down the organic material into something they can process, because worms don't have teeth.
No, they don't.
So they can't chew it. So that's why it's a symbiotic relationship with those guys. And when you charge your bed with the worm tea, what it does is immediately start breaking down that straw and the alfalfa and the compost into plant food.
And this is before you plant anything in it. Is that what you're saying?
No, you can do it at any particular time, but I usually complete the process of assembling the bed with the materials in it. I flood it with worm tea, then I can go ahead and plant it right then.
Oh.
So do this whole process in a day.
And what time of year do you do this in comparison to when you would be planting it? Do you need to do it in the fall and prepare?
No, you could just do it right at the time of planting.
Yes, you could. But somebody could go out this weekend and buy straw bales and a bale of alfalfa.
Two
bales of alfalfa. So you use one bale of alfalfa per every two bales of straw.
Correct.
That's what you do. Well, sounds easy.
It is. It's relatively easy.
Yeah, yeah. And then you cover that with compost up sort of to the top of the bed?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you brew worm tea. You know, we had a whole show about worm tea and compost tea a few months back. But maybe you could just talk about how you make the compost tea a little bit.
What I do is get a trash can, about a 30-gallon one from the local big box store. I go to an aquarium and get an aquarium air pump and a stone. What you want to do is remove the chlorine in the water first.
Okay.
If you're living in an environment which uses chloramine, then you're going to need to use a chemical agent to remove the ammonia and the bleach out of the water. Uh-huh. And you can get that at the same aquarium store, big box stores that carry it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a tablespoon for 30 gallons of water.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, it works really well. But you need to remove the chlorine, because basically what you're doing is growing bacteria and fungi in the water, and therefore the chlorine will kill it. That's why we put it in our water systems.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So to circumvent that.
And rainwater would be great if you had excess to
that. Oh, absolutely. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Then what I do is, you've put molasses in the water, fry the sugar source for the bacteria and the fungi. I also add, I get a half, nylon that you can get at the local dollar store or the local retail merchants for next to nothing.
Uh-huh.
And I just put it in a mixture of compost, a mixture of worm castings, some sea kelp. Sometimes I add, depending on what I'm planting, some nutrients specifically for that plant. For example, like Epsom salts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what I do is, I don't know if you've ever seen those little metal plastic clips. They're generally black.
I've seen a lot of kind of clips, but spring clips? Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
And what I do is drop the nylon into the solution and clip it to the side of the barrel with one of those spring clamps.
Okay.
And that holds it into place.
Uh-huh.
And it submerges itself. And as the water, you want to keep it aerated, and because you want to grow aerobic bacteria. And that way, you're not putting something dead into your garden in the first place. It's
right,
all
right.
alive. I let it cook for a couple days.
Uh-huh.
You usually get a little foam on the top from the gases being released mm-hmm. out of the solution. And then I just transferred an old plastic milk bottle, for example, into my garden location. And
you just pour it on?
Pour it on.
You know, I'm really intrigued at the compost tea thing, and I have never used it, but I'm going to get some supplies and start doing it because I've heard such great things about what compost tea does, even just sprayed on the plants itself.
Well, you can use this stuff throughout the process, and you just... The nice thing about the nylon, it's got a fine mesh to uh-huh. it, so you don't get large particulate matter uh-huh. in the water, and therefore you can put it into a sprayer mm-hmm. and then spray underneath the plants.
Yeah. How many gallons of compost tea do you end up with, and how
generally
water?
I make between 10 and 20 gallons at a time.
Okay.
And that'll handle one bed
yeah,
sufficiently.
Yeah.
I usually apply it two or three times during the process.
Uh-huh.
What's interesting about it is that when that bacteria starts breaking down in that organic material, it generates heat,
mm-hmm.
which starts your growing season earlier. Most plants need about 70 degrees before they really start to germinate, grow good roots, and become viable plants in your garden. So one example I did for a friend of mine, we put it all together, filled it up, put the worm tea in, and she called me back the next day and said the thing is on fire. Well, it happened to be about a 40-degree day, and there was so much heat being generated and the moisture's leaving right out of it, it was steam.
Oh.
We were both quite surprised.
There was no flames coming
no
out.
No flames. Come on, man. It's all
yeah.
wet.
I know. Well, I'm a big composter, and I've gotten my compost piles up to pretty high heat, you know, and I just love it when you turn it over that compost and all that steam starts coming out. So that's kind of what's happening in your process.
Yes. But
you don't turn it.
No. Basically, uh-huh. what we're doing is flooding the whole environment with the bacteria.
Uh-huh.
And as that bacteria breaks down, it generates the plant food,
uh-huh.
like in a regular composting pile, but at a huge volume rate.
Uh-huh.
The reason why I add bone meal and blood meal to it is to get some nutrients for the plant in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Because after I do that, I don't fertilize this thing.
Because it's turning into compost on its own?
Well, plant food.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of what they call red wigglers
yeah.
that are basically worm casting.
Yeah.
Worms used a lot to make the worm casting mm-hmm. themselves, and it's just like ringing a dinner bell. When you put that cardboard in the newspaper on the bottom, if you have a worm farm, you understand, because they love that carbon.
Yep.
And as a result, it's just ringing a dinner bell, and they're coming from all over your yard.
Yeah. So the worms are coming from underneath, and they're coming through the newspaper, eating that up, and then they're getting into the straw, and then mm-hmm. getting up into the alfalfa, and eventually they're just breaking the whole thing down.
Right.
And then, but then it starts to sink once it starts breaking down. And what happens then?
Well, every cycle, you just recharge it, throw some more straw, some more alfalfa mm-hmm. in there, and a little more compost,
mm-hmm.
and it just completes the cycle. After a few times doing this, you'll end up with a whole volume of what they call humus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just nothing but plant food. And since the plants for hundreds of millions of years have lived off the same kind of worm castings that nutrients that they have, they have an innate sense about it. And they really absorb the stuff. Tomato plants are really heavy feeders.
Uh-huh. They are. And so you don't add any plant food or anything after you've started this process.
Just worm tea from time to time.
Just the worm tea. Boy, that's amazing.
I have a question, if I could throw a question in there. I've talked to some people about straw bale gardening, and some people fear that they would attract mice.
In this environment, no, because it's wet. The mice you'll find at fall, if you got something out, they're always trying to get in the house, and their straw is a real good insulator. So that's when it's dry, you'll have them flocking to it. But
yeah.
this is basically a vertical column of water. Each bale of straw is capable of holding up to 250 pounds of water.
Ah.
So you have this huge water reservoir. The bacteria is generating heat. It's separating itself from the ground because the straw is, once again, the insulator. And so you're not being so affected by the cold in the ground itself. So that's why you're allowed to start your plants earlier. Yeah. The raised bed section that I utilize, you can put a frame over it, put bird netting. Mm-hmm. It keeps the moths out so you don't have the cabbage worms, the tomato worms, and every other kind of worm. Yeah. And in the event that you're going to have a late frost, you just cover it with a sheet that you got out of the local thrift store.
Yeah.
And the frost will fall on the sheet, pull the thing off, you're all set to go.
Yeah, just kind of making a little, like, cloche kind of.
Yeah, and since there's all this heat coming up from the decomposition of the material, then you got just a little, your own miniature greenhouse going on.
Yeah, no, that's great. What I really like about this whole method specifically is the heat that it generates, because I know, like, even as waiting to plant my peas, you know, I got my soil thermometer, which is a really handy little gadget.
Well,
yeah, and it was getting up, you know, and I have raised beds, but they're the typical, you know, foot tall, maybe with a basic soil mix that I've added much compost and drainage materials to. And the soil is really, really good now after a few years of doing this. But it still does take time for it to warm up in the spring.
Well, you got to understand, the planet's cold, okay?
The planet?
The planet. And yes. Our section of the planet is cold.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's radiating like opening the refrigerator door in the summertime and feeling that blast of cold air. And as a result, it does take a while for the surface ground to warm up to about 70 degrees.
Yeah.
This circumvents all that. Because you have an insulation, you have a heat generation source, and you're not so affected by the cold radiating out of the out of the ground.
It really makes a difference. I know, like, last year I had planted various beans at various times through the year. And, of course, beans are kind of a warm weather crop. You have to wait for the soil to warm up to a certain point. And then they germinate. They take their sweet time. And then I planted some in the summer, and the soil was very warm at that time. And those beans came up, like, almost immediately. They did, just because of the warmth of the soil, different germinating systems. Yeah. Now, I what I like about your system is what's different about it is the alfalfa, which I haven't seen in other systems, and the fact that it's enclosed in a raised bed, which makes it really handy for people to work with in a high raised bed like that.
Well,
at like kind of working level, so you're not down there, you know,
on your prayer bones.
Yeah, prayer bones. Yeah.
Basically, it's really good for individuals of all sizes. I've built and installed a lot of these in schools, and they grow real well. The kids like that. There's not a lot of heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. If you were going to feel a 4x8 foot box full of soil, you're going to feel it in your back, your arms, your shoulders. This is relatively quick and easy to do.
And it would seem to me also relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, it is.
Straw isn't that costly.
No, you can get it for probably around $10 or less a bale.
Uh-huh.
Alfalfa is going to run you about $12 to $15.
Okay.
So if you look at a 4x8 box, you got $40 of straw, maybe $40 of alfalfa. And if you make your own compost, or you can get it relatively inexpensive. So you got maybe $100 into your garden bed. It's going to generate the heat. It's going to make your plants grow. The beauty of it holds the water, so in the hot summer days, you don't have to worry about watering it so often.
Yeah.
Because it does end up being a source of water. It also modifies the temperature in there, because when it's 100 degrees, example, out there, that cool water closed in a bed is going to be cooler than the hot baked sun dirt next to you.
Yeah, that sounds good. And the straw holds a lot of water, but it also drains.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so that's a whole nother factor.
That it is. And if you make it out of a fencing material, you can put little gaps in the boards, and that way any excess water just sweeps out. So if you had your bed set up here right today in the rain, you're not going to flood your plants.
Mm-hmm. So you moved up here from Southern California very recently, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and so what brought you up here?
Well, started out when I was in elementary school, and I had a pen pal that lived in Oregon and sent me this giant pine cone. But after that, I grew up in Michigan, so we had a lot of similarities, water, forest, clay.
Okay.
And when I was about 10 years old, and I've been doing this for better than 50 years, scary thought,
I hear you.
I realized turning clay or tilling clay is just really hard, backbreaking work. And as time and infirmity gets onto you, you got to find solutions if you want to continue gardening. And this mm-hmm. allowed me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in a wheelchair can easily work mm-hmm. this kind of bed.
Right.
Anybody that's got knee issues, hip issues, and it gives you the wonderful thing about it is that as this composition gets consumed, that say if you're having tomatoes, they shrink down a little bit and everything's right at hand reachable.
Yeah, so there's a lot really to be said for that, that's for sure. But now you did this also, you did this in California, right? Didn't you work with the schools?
Yes, I had Episcopal Church I did this for, and they really had a great time with it. The kids do a similar process of turning the food over to food banks in mm-hmm. which they grow it. They plant, well, we go through a mm-hmm. whole process in which they plant the food. Occasionally we make worm teas with the classes mm-hmm. so that they understand the biology that's going on inside. And as a result, the kids just love it. And I've built beds for school children's parents so they could have their garden at home as well as the one at school.
Uh-huh.
And I just love turning kids on to gardening. It's so exciting for them, especially when they see it grow. And they, oh, I did this. And, you know, I get a lot of bragging rights when you grow some good stuff.
Oh, no kidding. I think we have a phone call. It is really true. If you introduce kids to gardening and they get cited as children, it sticks with them for life. Do we have a phone call, Mark? Great. How do we do this? We have a phone call. A question.
You can talk to the caller. She'd be on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Diana. It's Diane.
Oh, hi, Diane. Hi. Great. You called in. Fantastic.
Yes. And you have a question for the tuxedo gardener.
Okay. He's right here next to me.
All right.
Ask away.
Here it is. I wanted to know if he's ever used this medium to try and grow mushrooms from mushroom spawn. And if he has, can he tell me if it was successful or not?
Well, no, I haven't grown mushrooms with it. I don't have a local cave that I can put this stuff in or shelter it so it's in the dark.
Right.
But if you do some research, you'll find that straw is one of the key elements in making the soil or the growing medium for mushrooms.
Yes.
And the funny thing is that as that plant grew, it acquired all the nutrients that it needed to be successful in the environment. So you're basically stocking your growing medium with success.
Right, right.
Yeah.
My only concern is that, you know, mushrooms typically like cold and wet. And, you know, I'm wondering if that would just heat up too much for it to be successful.
Considering you had an environment of cold, okay, like a cave or some type underground surface, which is basically about 55 degrees, right?
Yes.
And therefore, you got something that's just sucking the living daylights out of the heat source and converting it into a lot cooler environment.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is that when I add all this bacteria into it, it happens rapidly. If mm-hmm. you just use the straw, the natural bacteria would eventually break it down into humans.
Right.
Go on. Sorry, Diana.
Go ahead, Diana.
Well, I was just going to say that when I did that mushroom cultivation class, and we grew oyster mushrooms in bags, we used straw.
Yes.
Yeah, and then after that had kind of sort of had a couple of crops, then we just tossed the straw into the garden bed, and it did produce some oyster mushrooms, and then they came and went pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really good question about building a straw bed specifically for mushrooms, and we're going to have to find out more about that, aren't we?
Yeah, I think, you know, typically when you buy the spawn from the vendors, they have recommendations about putting it in various types of bark and other medium.
Yes.
Because often particular types of mushrooms have a symbiotic relationship with certain trees.
Yes.
We all know this. And so if you don't have that available readily, you know, the particular bark or wood chips from those trees, I'm just wondering if this would work or not?
I think that it's something that we're going to have to do more research on because I'm really, as you know, really interested in this also.
Oh, I do know, yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to tell our audience that we work together with in the Mushroom Society.
Right. The other thing I've noticed is my grandsons have built, well, it's a kind of a fort with straw bales, and over the years those straw bales have broken down, but what's happened is that all kinds of mushrooms are now sprouting out of these straw bales.
And
it's just really piqued my interest to try and do a little bit more research into it and see.
Do you know what kind of mushrooms were growing?
They looked like oyster mushrooms, some of them, but I have been putting all kinds of mushrooms into this environment also.
Like when you go mushroom collecting, you just kind of toss them into the straw?
You know, what if it's gone off a little bit or, you know, doesn't look edible. I just bring them all over there to this particular area and I just plant them, hoping that I will get some results eventually.
It sounds like you are. Right?
But interesting that they're coming up in the straw and not where I've planted them. So I'm just wondering, you know, we know that the mycelium travel.
Yep.
And they're probably looking for nutrients. And we all think that there's hardly any nutrients in straw. But
as it breaks down.
Maybe there's more than we think there is.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. And as it breaks down, you know, more and more things kind of get inoculated into it.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's an interesting.
I think that's what's happening.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, and didn't you have a question about potatoes? We wanted to ask, John, did you ever successfully grow potatoes in straw bale beds?
I don't specifically grow into straw bale beds, okay? It's the composition of all three elements make it work. To me, at a premium method. I'm going to experiment with that now. I purchased a food grade 55 gallon drum, and I'm going to make a wire cage and see if we can grow them down at Pringle Creek on the surface.
With the straw bale bed method.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, but you do need to protect them from all the varmints. The voles and the moles and the...
Well, maybe that's why growing them in a container would be a good idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I did was I had my husband make a raised bed.
Uh-huh.
And I put that stucco mesh that you get from, you know, any hardware store on the bottom of the bed so the gophers couldn't come up from the bottom. And that's been extremely successful.
Mm, yeah, that sounds like a really good plan if you're bothered with those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling in, Diane.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you.
Great.
I'm all food for thought now.
All righty. We're going to be doing our research and get some better answers. But, you know, the mushroom world is full of new information and questions that nobody has answers to.
Exactly.
That's right.
So we need lots of people to be doing lots of research and
exactly.
Study.
And it's a backyard gardener, you know, who finds the answers sometimes.
Yes, it is.
All right. Okay. Thanks,
okay,
Diane.
Thanks, Diana.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for your answers too, Mr. Tuxedo Gardener.
You're more than welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so what are you hoping to do up here in Oregon now that you're here, John?
Well, I'm trying to see if I can, one, validate the process, and I don't see any real hurdles I need to overcome. It's probably one of the better solutions to dealing with the clay issue that's permeates Oregon because it's above the ground. It's got the little holes in it. It drains the water. Right. It holds the water. Generates heat. It's all around real nice little system.
Yeah, no, I think it really is too. And I've seen a lot of people try to use it, and sometimes they just plant right in the straw. Sometimes they kind of hollow it out and put a little soil in it and use the straw bale sometimes just like as an edging for the beds. And then and then they fill the beds with soil, and then as it breaks down, it adds to the soil. And there's all kinds of ways to use it.
That's true. And my limiting factor, I think, is the rodent issue because mice and gophers, ground squirrels can easily pass through the straw bales and into your garden bed, and you can have significant loss to your garden. That's why I like to build them higher. I put a wire mesh if I'm in an environment where I do have the gopher issues.
Also being in an enclosed raised bed with a wood frame around it, like you said sometimes you use, really would help that process, I think.
Well, because it's at the height of a desk, which is about 30 inches, it does inhibit some animals from crawling up to site.
Yeah, boy, that would be a real – that would be kind of nice to have a garden at table level.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So any final words here, John, before we just got a minute or so left?
Well,
so are you going to be developing a business up here in Oregon?
Yes, I'm going to be releasing the Tuxedo Gardener, a Kindle version in the next few weeks on Amazon. And see what kind of response and see what kind of ways people utilize the system. And there's going to be a dedicated website called TuxedoGardener.com, which only people who purchase the book find out in-depth information about that.
Well, you have quite a nice website right now.
Yes, I have one called naturesorganicgarden.com, and it's basically a synopsis of the research and a little bit of experimentation as well as things that I found that worked fairly well.
No, I found that to be very informative. It's a very nice website. And so it's called Nature's Organic Garden. And if anybody wants more information about this system, just you can go to that website, naturesorganicgarden.com. So, John, I think our time is up. And thank you for telling us about this. And I like this process. I wish I had – I'm going to try to find room for a straw bale or two in my garden, but – right now, it's kind of filled up in other ways. But for somebody just starting out, it's great.
Yes.
So, okay. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Diane.
Gonna plant me a garden.
Gonna plant me a garden.
Gonna make it grow.
Gonna make